From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we're your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And, of course, hour number two here, we're going to talk some about the Christmas season. I have producer Hardwood Forrest Connor. We have investigator Shelley Wright from Wright's Coin Shop. Shelley, you guys have just been hammered this holiday season, extremely busy. You've been telling me about some of the sales taking place at the shop. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Christmas time.
And people are coming to see you?
Yes.
Specifically?
Yes. Believe somebody came in earlier, well, before I got there today, and said they saw me on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't even wearing a number in front of me.
That's nice. People know, they recognize you. And, in fact, people in the area, they can go see you in person. But even if somebody's listening in California or something like that, they can call you up, and you will talk to them. And you can even supply them with coins and precious metals, whatever else, I guess, long distance. Is that right?
We can do that.
So what is your telephone number there at Wright's Coin Shop?
828-298-5402.
All right, that's 828-298-5402. And you can call Shelley and harass her or ask her about legitimate coin and precious metal issues. What else do you guys do there? Is that pretty much the gist of it?
Well, we have collector's coins.
Yeah? Okay.
But mostly lately, especially with the economy, everybody's been thinking gold, silver.
Yeah. Silver and gold, silver and gold. That's your Christmas theme, right?
You're right.
Well, yes, it is that time of year. The most wonderful time of the year. I'm just going to start singing this hour. Why don't we just have our own Christmas caroling session for us?
That would be kind of scary.
I was mentioning how that I'm getting some stranger stories coming on a more regular basis out of Virginia. And the thing about this time of year that is always a little bit troubling is people are supposed to be taking lessons from A Christmas Carol and Ebenezer Scrooge, and they're supposed to, you know, think about goodwill and sharing and helping and charity. But instead, some people just start fighting. And they start fighting over the nuances of their beliefs. Do you say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays? All that business, right? And personally, I think there's no reason whatsoever. You should not just be respectful of everybody's point of view. As long as a person is nonviolent and they're not trying to impose their own mind and belief system on others, this is the time for us to look at what brings us together instead of what divides us. But that just never is the way it works out. And the funny thing is, as we'll talk about in a minute, you have these people who are claiming that they're worshiping a particular thing this time of year, and yet oftentimes they are expressing that using objects from another belief system. And that always has been intriguing to me. But before I get to that, here again the story from Virginia. They are saying that a shocking Christmas time display was left in front of a courthouse recently. It showed a crucified skeleton in a Santa costume. Okay, so I'm not even sure exactly what this is supposed to mean. I mean, I know that Christmas has become over-commercialized and that Santa Claus doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the spirit of the season if you look at it from the commercial point of view. But nonetheless, a couple hours later, the display was knocked down. The skeleton was in a heap on the courthouse lawn. And there was some kind of a letter left there. But this whole thing, they believe, was set up by an atheist. And so it was a woman, they are claiming, who put this thing up. And she was using this as some kind of a statement of rebellion against Christmas in the name of atheism. And, you know, I don't have any problem with atheists, but I also don't see why that they should really care so much if other people believe something that they don't think is there, right? You see what I'm getting at? It's like, why do you care?
Yeah.
If you don't believe it's there, fine. Other people do believe, let them believe.
I respect your beliefs, but respect mine.
They're
very low tolerance.
And it doesn't have to be that way. I've got this story from CNN out of D.C., and it's saying that some atheists with children they attend religious services. There's a new study that says nearly one in five atheist scientists with children involve their families with religious institutions, even if they personally do not agree with the teachings. The study conducted by Rice University and the University of Buffalo founded this, and they discovered that scientists often affiliate with churches and other social groups for personal reasons. This is surprising to some people, but not to me, because let's just look at the idea, and I don't want to, you know, be too specific and dash anybody's dreams, but let's say, well, there are some people out there who just don't believe Santa's real, right? We'll talk a little more about Santa later on in the month, maybe. But even if you don't believe Santa's real, it's a fun thing for people to appreciate Santa's concept, right?
Right,
it's fun
right.
for children especially. Even though I have often said that I think the seeds of conspiracy are planted when some people find out different things than they believed when they're children about the nature of Santa and the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy, if that makes any sense to you. But point being here, we live in a society in which people decide to latch on to these concepts to enjoy themselves and to do something that breaks the monotony. And I think if you have children and they're going to grow up in a society where these concepts are embraced, they may as well be familiar with them, and even if they grow up and they decide they want to have a different point of view, at least they're making an informed decision, and they're going to get along better with others when they understand what others are thinking. Don't have to agree, but it's like me. I study many religions and points of view that I don't have to agree with and embrace, but you have to know what you're dealing with before you can say, I agree or I disagree, right?
Right.
We should inform ourselves. So that takes us a little bit closer to this this kind of classic discussion about the origin of Christmas. And in this country in particular, we think about it being about the birth of Jesus, right? In fact, Christ Mass is sort of what this all alludes to, which, you know, we can talk a little bit about. But when you start looking again at how it is expressed, there are things that don't have anything to do with a belief in the birth of Jesus that are just accepted symbols of the Christmas season. And I have a list of some of these things. I don't know how many I'm going to get into here. But as far as I can tell from doing research, most of this stuff is factual. Of course, Christmas is a holiday shared and celebrated by many religions, so you can say that it has an effect on the entire world. And the spirit of Christmas is one thing, but let's talk a little bit more about how it originated. The truth of the matter is that most, if not all, of the customs of Christmas actually predate the supposed birth time of Jesus. In fact, the date of December 25th comes from Rome and was a celebration of the Italic god Saturn and the rebirth of the sun god. And this celebration of the sun was done long before people believed Jesus was ever born. noted by pre-Christian Romans and other pagans, that daylight began to increase after December 22nd. Decreased when they assumed that the sun god had died. And so they were really talking about the idea of the sun sort of disappearing and this cold darkness coming across the land. And there was always a big relationship between the cosmic bodies and these various, you know, ancient societies for obvious reasons. In Germany, the worship of the sun and ideas about life and fertility were sort of symbolized by the evergreen tree. Okay, this tree symbolized the essence of life, and that's why that they would cut down the tree and bring it in order to represent this idea that there is still life and to hope that by thinking about it, life would soon return. And holly, of course, is something you see sprigs of holly all over the place. Holly wood was used by witches to make wands. Witches always believed that holly wood was important. The white berries of mistletoe, those are pagan. They were thought to be droplets of fertility. And holly and mistletoe were hung in doorways of temples and homes to invoke powers of fertility in those who stood beneath them and kissed, causing the spirits of gods and goddesses to enter them. So again, we're talking about really fertility. That's what this whole thing is about. And so they transcended the borders of Rome and Germany, really to most of the far reaches of what we consider the kind of known European-esque world. So we look at again that word Christmas, and it is a combination of the words Christ and Mass. And Mass means death and was coined originally by the Roman Catholic Church and belongs to Rome. And so the ritual of the Mass involves the death of Christ and the distribution of the host, which basically means the victim. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about these actual origins of things that we celebrate in this country in Christmas, and why that they relate more to things that don't have anything to do with this idea of Jesus being born, and yet a lot of people, well, they claim it does, and they treat it as if it does. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, the program where the unusual becomes usual. Speaking of strange, it's that time of year, and it really is an unusual time of year. As I said earlier, imagine if you were an alien and you came to this planet and you saw us cutting down trees, dragging them in, running lights all around them, putting colored lights around our houses. Some of these animatronic displays people put up around the country are amazing. And it just wouldn't make a lot of sense to you, because if you start digging into it logically, most of it doesn't make a lot of sense to us either. We just do it because we've always kind of done it, and also retailers are looking for anything they can get their hands on to make you pay more attention to what they are offering and what you should be buying. And, you know, that's fine, but it does take a little bit of the meaning out of it in a way, especially when you look at, again, the Christmas Carol, the story of Uncle Scrooge. Well, he's Scrooge, not Uncle Scrooge. That would be yeah.
the Disney
character. You look at Ebenezer Scrooge, and the point is, don't live your life focused solely on money, because you're missing the point. And you see, you know, Jacob Marley there, who has a link of chain for each one of his greedy desires. And we each are forging our own chains every day. And you should not forget about, you know, helping others and freeing others as well. But the Roman Catholic Church has a lot to do with how we view Christmas today. And that's because of the strategy that the Catholic Church used to take in, to transform a lot of the pagans. It was kind of like, you know, we're going to kill you, or you can adopt this system. And I remember reading somewhere that there was one of these a Roman Catholic, I guess you would call him a figurehead, who would now be considered a saint, who had said, you know, if you go out in the middle of the wilderness and you find a bunch of heathens gathered around a tree, worshiping it, and you just cut down the tree and say, you guys are all wrong, you're going to hell. You're not going to win over any people that way. It's just going to cause conflict. But if you go to that tree and you say, one moment, and you consecrate it, and bless it, and say, this is a creation of God, and it's blessed by Jesus. Now you guys can get back to worshiping it. Now they're worshiping Jesus, so to speak, because of the fact that you have adopted their belief system into your belief system. And so it's a strategy. It was a PR strategy. And obviously, it worked, because most of the world now is looking at it from that Catholic point of view, even though this has been done time and time again. I mean, we talked about the same thing at Halloween, how this ghoulish season was transformed by the Catholic Church into, you know, All Souls Day and All Saints Day. That didn't work quite as well, though, because people still have kind of separated a little bit the two. But anyway, you know, the Romans, they said basically to these pagan cultures, you know, bring your gods and goddesses and rituals, and we'll just kind of assign our Christian-sounding titles and symbology to them. And when Martin Luther started the Reformation in 1517, they took with them a lot of this paganism that was firmly embedded in Rome. And they left, you know, Christmas intact. So the Puritans in England, and later the Massachusetts colony, they actually outlawed Christmas as witchcraft, because they kept up with the history and they said, no, this is not anything that actually reflects, you know, our belief in the birth of Jesus. So if that's one of the reasons there's always been this conflict swirling around it. But actually, and I think this is pretty commonly known, I don't think anybody really believes that Jesus was born December 25th. I have had some experts on this show who have made a pretty convincing case for the fact that Jesus might have been born in April. And, you know, and they're looking at all these variables with descriptions of the weather and so on. I don't know. No, nobody knows. I believe April 17th was actually a date that they had come up with at one point, and I thought that was kind of funny because I think that's the birthday of Micah and Caleb Hanks. Both Micah and his brother Caleb were born on the same day, 3 years apart. I wonder what the chances of that are. So, you know, we can go on and on down this line of thinking, but to me, the point is, don't get so caught up in the self-righteous attitude that your way of celebrating Christmas, and whether you say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays or whatever, is so important that you should be out there, you know, hanging skeletons in Santa suits in public places and causing problems. Because we all here are sort of taking a conglomeration of various aspects of history and using it for more of a festive environment. And it is strange. Every part of it is strange. But the one thing I can say is that it makes sense to me that people thousands of years ago would have worshipped the sun, because that is the beacon that provides the visible life and growth that they enjoyed to sustain human civilization. And it's easy for us, you know, we grew up in a world, here's what the earth is, you know, it's a blue ball. You know, when you were a baby, yeah, this is the earth, it's a blue ball. There's a bunch of black stuff around it. Here's the sun, it's a big yellow ball over here. Here's the moon, it's a little white ball. You're taught all this when you're a tiny, tiny little creature, and you say, okay. But if you'd never grown up with that, who knows what you think this stuff is? You see this big bright thing that appears, that, you know, when it's around, things grow, things flourish, you warm up. And you could even say that, well, if you believe everything was created by a creator, well, then that's just another part of it. So the fighting that goes on this time of year is ridiculous, and there's no sense for people to be hypocritical about their own little particular version of it. After all, there are people out there who are saying that, well, next year is going to be the end. It's all going to come to an end. And we talk a lot about 2012 on this program because I really think some crazy stuff is going to go down next year. It's already started. But I don't think the world's going to come to an end. We've talked about this. And now there's a story out here. This version I have is in the Huffington Post. And it says, end of the world not in 2012, according to decoded Mayan tablet. And they say here, a university professor in Australia has been intensively interpreting and studying the Mayan stuff. And he says, quote, the date acquired a symbolic value because it's seen as a reflection of the day of creation. It is a passage of a god and not necessarily some destructive great leap for humanity, end quote. So what that means is that if we go through these cycles, and the Maya were really big on cycles, that if you see 2012, especially December 21st, 2012, as a reflection of the day of creation, then all that means is there's going to be a rebirth of some kind, and hopefully it will be a positive thing. But you can't create something new without other things dying off. And to me, things dying off is a good thing. Because every single day in this world, people sit around and gripe and complain every day about how they have some kind of problem with the world. Doesn't matter. Take your pick. If you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or an atheist or a Christian or a pagan, everybody's got some kind of problem with the way things are. And so why shouldn't we all be happy about the idea that there may be a change? Some things need to die. Some things need to deteriorate. They need to decay. That's the only way we're going to provide room for maybe something that could be better. So I feel positive. I think it's going to be a good time for open-minded people who want to see something positive come. When we take this break here, I'm going to read a story. Let's see. When we come back, I'll share this with you. Some of you are traveling. A lot of people are traveling this time of year. And there is a new story out about bed bugs and why bed bugs are so terrible. They finally cracked the mystery of the bed bug. They say the bed bugs are so bad because they're inbred. I'll explain when we come back. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual.
Accident and caught at coming to school, but when he finally came back, his hair had turned from black into bright white. He said that it was from when the cousin smashed his soul.
Strangers around the globe. This is Speaking of Strange, coming at you from Asheville, North Carolina, land of the sky. And I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. What do you think is going to happen in 2012? Some people believe this is going to be our last Christmas because of December 21st, 2012. You know, on December 21st, 2012... for the first time in 26,000 years, all of the bodies in our solar system are going to be perfectly aligned at 11:11 universal time. Now, I'm here on the East Coast, so that will be, I believe, at 6:11 a.m. So that means if you're going to have your big 2012 party, you need to do it Thursday night. Don't wait till Friday for that, because it's a Friday morning here on the East Coast of the United States. Friday morning, 6:11 a.m. So start partying the night before. Everybody stays up all night, and at very least, you will get to go out, and maybe if the weather's clear, you might be able to look up and see something cool. I don't know, when everything aligns. I've been thinking for years about what to do that day, that moment, and I'm still not sure what I'm going to do. You know what you're going to do, Forrest? Are you going to be hiding somewhere in a cave in the hills?
Well, you've invited me to a big blowout at your place.
Yeah, that's what I've been thinking about doing. I don't know if I convinced my wife at this point, though. I'm not sure if I want to be at my place for 2012. I might go somewhere more secure.
Find somewhere that has a nice big fire pit somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's going to be cold, so
yeah,
definitely.
I said a big fire pit.
Yeah. We got to figure out what we're going to do. Well, you know, Forrest, you pointed out something just before we began the show. And this is something that I'm sure people are going to be freaking out about. Our last program, we talked about this website, Illuminati.org.
Right.
And how that if you go to the website, it's just a black, blank page. But if you hit Control-A, a countdown appears. Okay, and it's been counting down for, I think, years. And it was counting down to last Wednesday. And so we were wondering what's going to happen. And the day before, last Tuesday, the site disappeared.
It's gone.
Yeah. So there's no explanation for what this site was about. But last Wednesday, this story came out that you pointed out. Headline, mysterious planet-sized object spotted near Mercury. We're talking about the planet Mercury here, so a mysterious planet-sized object spotted near Mercury. Excuse me. The story says, is a giant cloaked spaceship orbiting around Mercury. Now, let me clarify. This, it's not time to put on your Nikes and drink the punch. We don't know what this is yet. But some are speculating it is a giant spaceship. There is a camera, apparently, above a NASA spacecraft. And they're saying here in the story, the camera caught a wave of electronically charged material shooting out from the sun and hitting Mercury. So theorists have seized on the images captured from the coronal mass ejection as suggestive of alien life hanging out in our own backyard, basically. Specifically, the solar flare washing over Mercury appears to hit another object of comparable size. Quote, it's cylindrical on either side and has a shape in the middle. It definitely looks like a shape to me and is very obvious. It seems to be cloaked, end quote, according to some guy on YouTube. That's the day and age we live in. Expert commentary from some dude on YouTube. Some anonymous guy. Hundreds of thousands of people are looking at this. Who knows? You know, what's in space? Who knows? We have to take the words of others, even if that means NASA. But it has been considered significant enough to be prominently featured on Yahoo and some other news sites. So, I don't know. I have no idea, but we'll keep our eye on it.
Get Commander Y on that one.
Yeah, I'd love to see what Commander Y thinks about this. I think as 2012 grows nigh, he is going to have more and more insight to share with us about these strange things that are appearing in the cold vacuum of space. But bringing it back down to Earth, a lot of people do travel this time of year, and I think it's just a terrible time to travel. I try to batten down the hatches and stay in one place. But there is concern about bed bugs. And, you know, I've traveled a lot and stayed in many, many hotels. I've never encountered bed bugs, thank goodness, knock on wood. But you see these programs on TV about bed bugs, and it just looks like the apocalypse. You know, one of the seals has cracked open, that these bed bugs, they come out and they attack you in the night, and you're just eaten up the next day. You're just covered in red, irritated spots. They get in your luggage. They come home with you. They take over your house. They're just terribly persistent, horrible, incredibly difficult to get rid of. In some hotel rooms, they call in exterminators, and they just have to, like, crank up the heat and bring in heaters so that it's, like, 200 degrees and just cook them, basically, for a few hours. It's the only way they can effectively get rid of them. And so there's been a lot of study, you know, as to why these bed bugs are so strong and mean and persistent. And they say that after nearly disappearing in the U.S., the blood-sucking pests have made a comeback, quickly infesting apartment buildings, stubbornly resisting common insecticides. New York alone spends about $40 million a year in bed bug control. Now, a study by some guys at North Carolina State University have discovered the genes indicate that most of them have very low genetic diversity. They're close relatives. They've been inbreeding, basically. They start from a very small number of individuals. And this inbreeding is creating genetic deformities, which is making them somehow mutate into this super bug. Unlike ticks, They stay attached for a blood meal for just 5 to 10 minutes. That's good at least. So now they're trying to figure out how to get these bed bugs to stop, you know, getting it on with each other. Because they're just getting stronger and stronger somehow. It's bizarre. Speaking of bedtime, when we come back, how about a story about bedtime with Hitler? That sounds fun. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Lee crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turn and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance. No flowers, no flashbulbs, no wine. He's haunted by something he cannot define. Bowel-shaking earthquakes of doubt and remorse assail him, impale him with monster truck force. In his mind, he's still driving, still making the grade. She's hoping in time that her memories will fade. Cause he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago, somebody left with the cup. But he's striving and driving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. Cause he's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance. He's going for speed.
In the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange, coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. That's when we get into some of the news that is, well, outrageous and controversial, not for the easily offended, certainly not for the kiddies. Stick around for that if you're my type of person. Otherwise, might want to skip an hour and come back and listen to something nice and family-friendly. I was talking before the break about, a topic that will always be controversial. Hitler, considered by many to be the most evil man ever to live. And yet, people make fun of Hitler. Mel Brooks made fun of Hitler. Charlie Chaplin made fun of Hitler. That's one way of dealing with the silliness of his evil. And recently I was in a shop here in Asheville, and they had a model of the Hindenburg, and they had replaced the swastikas on the Hindenburg with just crosses, because it's still considered unacceptable to even display a swastika in many cases, even though it's on something historic, which I think is going a bit far. I mean, we all know that Hitler and the Nazis were evil, but we don't have to, like, pretend that we cannot be exposed to the symbol of this thing that happened. You know, we all get it. We know they were evil, but the Hindenburg, you know, it had swastikas on it.
Well, also, Hitler took the symbol of the swastika. Was it not an Indian symbol for
yes.
the sun before
yeah.
that?
Yeah, it had been used in many different ways, and it's a shame that, you know, one guy can do that to it. So a lot of people will not carry Hitler-oriented items publicly, but right now, two pieces of Hitler's personalized bed linen, complete with swastikas and his initials, are going up for auction in Britain. And now, and the Brits, you know, if anybody should hate Hitler, it's the Brits. You know, during the Blitz there, he just destroyed Britain. I mean, it's incredible what those people went through. It's a single white bed sheet and pillowcase embroidered with the image of an eagle perched on a swastika inside a circle flanked by the initials. And so they're saying this is extremely rare. I don't know how big this piece is, but that is really creepy, though, to think of something that was presumably, you know, around Hitler's body when he was lying there dreaming at night. What in the world were the dreams like in the mind of a guy like Adolf Hitler? He believed himself to be godlike, and a lot of other people did, too. You know, they actually considered him a god. The children would be taught songs where they were basically worshiping Hitler. And it's incredible that a guy went into a beer hall and just was able to magnetize these people enough to almost take over the world. Who knows what was in his mind? We know the last thing that went through his mind, though. It was a bullet. I was talking about weird objects and travel in general. Here's something I'll tell you before we have to go to a break here. One time I went out to Los Angeles to do a TV show, and I was kind of in a rush, and the cab driver, he dropped me off in front of my hotel. I got my bags out of the back. He went off into the night, and I got inside, and I realized, oh, crap, where's my laptop? I had left my laptop in the guy's car because he had, like, a gas tank in the back, like a propane tank. It was one of these things in the trunk, whatever they're using. And my laptop had slid under there, and I thought it was gone forever. I finally got it back, though. I was so relieved. I gave the guy a huge tip. There's this story out about the weird things that people leave in cabs, especially in various parts of the world. There's been a survey done of strange things that people have left in cabs. A London cabbie says that somebody left a stuffed dead donkey in his cab one time. I'm not sure how you forget that one. And then listen to this. A Parisian driver said one time he picked up a woman. She got into his cab, took off her clothes, paid him, and got out again. And just walked away naked. So if you're traveling this holiday season, always make sure you get the number of the cab and a receipt. So if you need to, you can track down your belongings. That's a hard-earned lesson for those of you who might be using that service. We're going to take our break. When we come back, it will be the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. There is